Hey all, it's Evan Hill here of Real Hawk Talk. Super excited to talk to you about our good friends over at Burger Master. If you know anything about me, I crave burgers in my sleep. I do not mess around. Started in 1952, Burger Master is the best burger chain in Washington State. They have locations all over the Puget Sound in Aurora, Bellevue, Everett, Mill Creek, University, and Mount Vernon. Their fresh ingredients and classic drive-in experience make them the greatest burger chain in the state of Washington. Stop by Burger Master on your way home from a Seahawks game. You won't regret it. Hey all, Evan Hill here of Real Hawk Talk. Super excited to talk to you guys about our good friend Blake Johnson of ManifestFit.com. Football season is quickly approaching, and it is a struggle to stay in shape while eating burgers and nachos. ManifestFit.com is your one, only true online personal training service with workout and nutrition programs specifically based on your needs. They work with clients all over the U.S., and what makes Blake and ManifestFit.com so unique is that they don't believe training should be a luxury item. Now's the time to start. Head over to ManifestFit.com. Click on how to join and fill out the form. Their team will get back to you ASAP and help you start building a healthier, happier, louder Seahawks fan life.
The skyline is etched in my veins. You can never put that out, no matter how hard it rains. My city.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to an emergency podcast edition of Real Hawk Talk. I am Brian Nemhauser. You can find me on Twitter at HawkBlogger. Sorry, still getting a little discombobulated, a bunch of things going on. Yes, you can find me on Twitter at HawkBlogger. And obviously, you can find us here on YouTube I think we're a Real Hawk Talk is our handle on YouTube now. And on any podcasts you look for, wherever you go for look for Real Hawk Talk, you will find us on Spotify and so forth. And I think I'm going to be running solo tonight, so that was part of the, you know, moving things around as we kind of tried to do this randomly.
Okay, can you guys hear me? Let me know if this is working for you all. Give me a still silent. Still nothing? Yes? All right, yes. Sorry. We're having all sorts of technical difficulties tonight, which is why it took so long to go live and restarted the computer. Still didn't matter. So we're going to have lower quality audio, but at least you'll be able to hear me. I do not think that the headphones will go out. Is that possible? Anyway, so Seahawks had some news today. Nothing I think that was terribly surprising, although it all kind of happened at once. They released Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, and Will Dissly today. And so three starters for this team. And I think everybody saw the Jamal Adams move coming. He was making a huge cap number this year, and moving on from him, you know, made a lot of sense, not only from a cap perspective, but from just a level of play perspective. This is a guy that just has been injured for a long time and continues to get injured. And last year, it looked like kind of the season that jumps the shark for people that are my age and remember the reference. He didn't look like an NFL player last year. Initially, when he came back, he actually looked better than I expected. But then within a few games, he just did not move around in a way that would allow him to play NFL football, even in short stints. And so they shut him down against his will. And odds are that's probably the end of his career. Those are probably the odds for Jamal Adams. There is some chance, because this was the first year back from a major surgery. Quad tendon is not something that a lot of people recover from at all, but this was his first year back from it. A lot of guys are better in their second off season when they're not doing rehab the whole time and can just gain strength. So maybe Jamal catches on. I'm sure he'll get a shot somewhere in training camp or something like that, but it's hard to say whether he is going to really make it back. Quandre Diggs, a different story. Quandre Diggs was a good player. Quandre Diggs is a quality deep safety, good cover guy in general. skilled at taking away the seams and, you know, has made a number of Pro Bowls with the Seahawks. And he, I think by almost any assessment, did more than was expected for somebody who was acquired for a fifth round pick from the Lions. Multiple Pro Bowls, had multiple years with leading the NFL in interceptions for safeties. And I think he was one of the only players with 3+ interceptions in multiple years for a while. Didn't have that last year. Quandre Diggs is not a player whose level of play degraded significantly. I think Quandre Diggs is a guy who was going into the last year of his deal, had a huge cap number, and I'm just not sure it was a great fit for what Mike McDonald wants to build on defense. And I think Jeff Simmons made a great point on Twitter, which was also, if you got one more year on your deal, as a new coach, do you really want to invest in getting this guy up to speed on your defense, knowing you're probably going to move on from him after that? I think that's a really good point and something also to consider there. But predominantly, this was about Quandre Diggs having a massive cap hit just not being worth $26, $27 million on the cap this year. And finally, Will Dissly. Will Dissly was really the third out of three tight ends last year in snaps and utilization. He signed a big deal. He got that deal because Russell Wilson really wanted him in Denver when Russell got traded, bid up Disley's contract, and the Seahawks for some reason matched it. And as much as I love Will Dissly, he was never really worth that contract, and he was never going to see this third year of the deal. So again, he was also let go. A guy that I would expect to see let go that they have not yet announced yet is Brian Monet. That would be another $5.4 million in cap savings if they let him go, and he's coming off an injury. He didn't play all last season, and his recovery sounded pretty, you know, not great. So that's another name that I think we could see called out soon, but we did not see today. And we'll see what happens with Tyler Lockett. I'm not going to go into that. We'll just talk about what happened today. So I think the first piece to kind of reflect on here is these are three starters, and two of them play the same position. Not technically the same position, but they are both safeties. Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs are safeties. Your only starter from last year at that position that's on the roster is Julian Love. Now, Julian Love made a Pro Bowl last year, much to his own surprise. In his first year with the Seahawks, he's got one more year left in his deal. He's 26 years old. And despite what a lot of people think, I thought he was a very good player last year. His first two games were awful, were really, really bad. And then he was one of the better safeties in the NFC for sure the rest of the year. So Julian Love is a guy that can play deep safety. If you remember the Eagles game, you remember the ground he covered to pick off that final pass and cement that win. You think about how he ran to block for Devin Witherspoon in New York after his interception against the Giants, how fast he is. Julian Love is deceptively fast. He can cover a lot of ground. He can play nickel. He can actually play outside corner in a pinch. So I think he's a pretty valuable dude and is only making, you know, $5 million in salary this year. He counts $8 million against the cap, but you know, I think he's a clear starter, and he's a guy that I think has the potential to have an expanded role. And I think if I'm Mike McDonald, I look at Julian Love, and I'm not saying he's Kyle Hamilton, because he's certainly not, but I see a guy that's a little bit of a Swiss Army knife that could be used in a lot of different ways. Mike McDonald likes those kind of players and is smart about how to utilize them and get the most out of them. So I think Julian Love is in for a pretty meaningful role. I think that's likely. But then the other piece that I wanted to bring up was I think there's some really good safeties. If you've been watching our Real Hawk Talk episodes, we did the defense last time and looked at different positions. And if you look at the safeties available on the market, I'm not talking about top end safeties because it doesn't make any sense to clear cap room from the most expensive part of your team, safety, which is not where you want all your cap, and then to go spend it there. They cleared cap room from safety so that they could move it to front seven, most likely defensive line, Leonard Williams, things like that. Maybe Jordan Brooks, but we'll see. And then also offensive line. So I think the money's meant to start shifting to the trenches. We should all, as fans, want to see a higher percentage of the cap being spent on the offensive and defensive lines, period. Should not be most of it spent on wide receivers and safeties. I personally don't think that's the way you build a championship team. So I'm happy to see that. But my point is, as I ramble here, I don't think that they're going to go get Antoine Winfield, top of the safety market. Like, that doesn't make any sense. He's a fantastic player. Don't think that makes sense. I don't even think they're going to go for the next level guys, you know, even down to like Xavier McKinney, who PFF, they've got him projected at $13.5 million a year. I don't think they're going to do that either. I do think that there's some guys like Geno Stone, who was with Baltimore, had a very good year under Mike McDonald, expected to potentially, this is what PFF, now again, I think their contract projections are, who knows? They're just guesses. But they have him at making $6.5 million a year. You know, if you can get Geno Stone for $6.5 million and you've got Julian Love at $5 million, I think that's a potentially an upgrade at your safety position for a lot less money. Julian Blackman from the Colts, another, you know, I should say Geno Stone's 24, going to be 25 this year. Julian Blackman is 25. I think he's a really interesting player. Jordan Fuller is 26. He's an interesting player from the Chargers. Jordan Whitehead is 27, so a little bit older, but also is a good cover guy. I don't think CJ Gardner-Johnson, you know, he's a bit of a spitfire. He had some impact for the Eagles and the Lions. I don't think that's Mike McDonald's kind of guy. Deshaun Elliott's okay. He's another guy. He's 27. Tayshawn Gibson, most likely back to the 49ers, but who knows? He's also 34. I don't think there's any reason they'd go after him. There's this guy, Alohi Gilman from the Chargers, who also had a really great coverage grade in for PFF in 2023. His overall grade was 86, which is crazy, but you know, he's 26 years old. He's a guy that maybe they'd look at. I think Darnell Savage is interesting as well. He's 26. Mike Edwards, I mean, Jeremy Chin is another guy, 26. So you get the point here. There's a bunch of these guys that are 26, 25 that are going to be relatively inexpensive players. Even Taylor Rapp, if you're an old Husky guy. But I just think there's some interesting names out there for the Seahawks to think about. And when you've got a safety market like that, it means the supply is going to be high, and it means that you could potentially get a pretty good deal on one of these third tier safeties who actually could end up playing like a second or first tier guy, depending on what Mike McDonald asks of them. And now you're really starting to get younger, maybe get better. Because look, as much as I think Quandre Diggs is a good player, Quandre Diggs was really bad at tackling. And part of the safety role, yes, the number one part of the safety role for his particular position is to eliminate the seams and the slants and to keep things from, you know, explosives over the top. I think he was pretty good in that capacity. I think another part of safety is to limit explosive plays on the ground. And Quandre Diggs was awful at that for the most part. I think he missed so many tackles. And honestly, there have been times over the past few years where he seemed to be making business decisions where he just wasn't interested in making tackles. And so I love cheering for Quandre Diggs. Seems like a really good guy. Happy that we had him on the team. Also kind of ready for something new there. So I don't even really feel that sentimental about it, any of these cuts. I think all of these things are steps forward for this team, and they're a sign that the Seahawks are not just going to duct tape some well-known names together to try to cobble together a decent team. They're going to try to reset. Salary cap should be healthy next year, especially with these moves. And now Mike McDonald has the opportunity to kind of assemble his safety, the position the way he wants. But the Seahawks are going to have to do something in free agency. Yes, they've got Jarek Reed. I think Jarek Reed will recover. I like Jarek Reed. I don't think you can assume he's going to slip in as a starter. That's a big leap. Yes, Kobe Bryant switched and played safety. I think he's got some potential there. We'll see, but I'm not going to assume that they're just going to be happy. I think that they are at least going to sign one free agent safety. Possible they sign a couple if they get a steal. They didn't expect to sign Julian Love. He was on the market way late last year, and they got a screaming deal on him. Turned out pretty darn well. If they had not made that Julian Love move, think of where they'd be right now. They'd still likely have to cut those two guys that they did, and then what? You know, like it would have been, the cupboard would have been bare. So at least you've got Julian Love as a very solid starter, and now you can build beyond that. So I think we'll see what happens there. And then really quickly on the Will Dissly piece, I will just say that, you know, tight end is a position that now every one of your, essentially your tight ends from last year are off the team. So you had Will Dissly, you had Colby Parkinson, you had Noah Fant. Parkinson and Fant are already free agents. Now Dissly is as well. And the team's going to have to go out there and sign a tight end. I don't think that they should spend on Noah Fant. I don't think that's where the money should go. I don't think tight end is the position that you need to build around. I believe they should nab one tight end in free agency. I think that should be Colby Parkinson, but Jonnu Smith's another name to watch. Got released from Atlanta. Was it Atlanta? I think it was Atlanta. Anyway, Jonnu Smith's a move tight end, receiving tight end, can fill some of that gap. And then there's a number of blocking tight ends in the draft. So there's some pretty interesting athletes that showed up in the combine in the draft. So I want to pull up, let me see if I can pull these guys up. There's a number of guys. I mean, obviously Brock Bowers, I don't know that they're going to go him in the first round. Does open the possibility. Cade Stover from Ohio State's a name. Ben Sinnott, Theo Johnson was a guy from Penn State who had a killer combine, just absolutely blew up the combine. AJ Barner's a name. Tip Ryman, this is a guy, 6'5", 265, that was interesting to me. He, let me see if they've got his combine numbers here. Probably not yet. Come on, Slackers. Tip Ryman, combine. Yeah, so he was the heaviest of all the tight ends at the combine, but ran a 4.64 40. Had a very fast three cone time of 7.02 and a 10-foot broad jump with a 33.5-inch vertical. So I think Tip Ryman's an interesting name. He might definitely get pushed up the draft board, but this guy's at least a good blocker with some potential to be more. I'm curious if you guys are just watching me do searching online. I like looking at Mock Draftable. If you guys ever use that, it's kind of a cool site, mockdraftable.com. Let me see if they've entered combine numbers yet. Doesn't look like it. Too bad. Well, anyway, Tip Ryman's another name that's interesting. So there's a few guys in the draft. I'm not so worried about tight end. They can go and get one of these guys later in the draft. They don't need to make it a priority, and they just need to sign one free agent. Yeah, I saw people talking about Culp from Washington. He's good. Like, he's a great athlete. You've got Jack, Westover, who obviously Ryan Grubb knows and will most likely be an undrafted free agent. So yeah, and tight end was a important part of Grubb's offense, but it was not the focal point. So, you know, I just don't think it's a big deal to be in the position we're in on the tight end spot. And so where does that leave us? You know, pretty much the same place I've been since before the combine and before these moves. I think that the Seahawks need to sign a guard in free agency. They need to draft someone on the interior line in the draft, the first three rounds. You know, they need to draft a tight end. They need to sign a tight end. They need to sign at least one safety from that group I mentioned. They're going to need to sign, I think, a couple linebackers in free agency. Personally, I would go for the cheaper options. I know a lot of folks are really desperate that Jordan Brooks needs to be back. I'll just say this with Jordan Brooks, folks. I'm not saying Jordan Brooks is a bad player by any stretch, but he's good enough that he's going to cost a lot of money, and the guy's been injured a lot. So it isn't hard to imagine that we'd be right back to where we are now if you signed Jordan Brooks, because he could very easily be injured again. Now you've sunk big money into a second contract. I am just a guy, when I'm looking at building a roster, what I want to see my team do is, if you're signing a guy to a second contract, whether it's your guy or a free agent from another team, I want this person to be really, really clear cut, exactly what you need, and exactly worth what you're going to spend. And sorry, I got distracted by something in the window. But more importantly than that, that you're going to actually have a high probability of getting the return on that investment. And the besides quality of player, their health, their durability factors in. I mean, just see what happened with Jamal Adams. As much as you maybe think he was never going to be worth the contract he was given, the number one reason he wasn't earning anywhere close to that is because of injury. And I'm sorry, but Jordan Brooks has been injured quite a bit in his career in 4 years. So I'm just not convinced that you will feel good about signing Jordan Brooks to a big deal. And as much as I like Patrick Queen, I'm not sure that you'd feel good about spending all that money there either. I think there's some other more affordable options at the linebacker spot. And so what that would allow you to do is really spend a little bit of money on Leonard Williams. Let me put it this way. Now, you won't like this, but if you could only sign one, if you could sign Jordan Brooks for $13 million a year, or you could sign Leonard Williams for $20 million a year, which do you do? I think a lot of people might say Jordan Brooks. For me, I'd probably overpay a little bit more for Leonard Williams, because it's going to be hard to find the defensive tackle you're looking for in the draft. I think that there's not other defensive tackles free agency wise that I think you're going to get either. So what are your options? Whereas with linebacker, I think there are a lot of linebacker options in free agency. I think there's at least enough in the draft that you should be able to get one if you take one in the first three rounds that has starting potential. And then I think you're in an okay position. I also think that you can get away a little bit with lesser linebacker play if you have good defensive line play. I don't think you can get away with having a bad defensive line and very good linebackers. Generally, that massively degrades the play of linebackers. So even though I really don't love the idea of spending $20 million a year on Leonard Williams, I think I'd rather overpay a little bit for him. And some of these moves allow you to afford to overpay for Leonard Williams. And then I think it also allows you to have some money available for guard. That is a place I hope that they really spend, like their early priorities should be offensive and defensive line. And if they can add one high quality guy like Zeitler on the front end, and a guy like Leonard Williams on the defensive side, you're just in a much, much better position to build going into next year. Now, I've been talking for a long time, and I know there was a super chat from my friend Michael Mathis, who I really appreciate. So, by the way, really, really appreciate your support. If you guys haven't already, give the show a like. It's literally the least you could do. So please give the show a like. Click subscribe. We've got hundreds of new people subscribing every month. We're about to break 10,000 subscribers. Would love to get you to subscribe to the channel. Click the bell to get notified for when we do these emergency pods. And then go to patreon.com/hawkblogger. What are you doing? Sign up, get access to the Slack channel now where the conversation's going all day long. And is just hopping for the offseason. Plus, proceeds are going to charity. We've donated over $260,000 to charity. You can really just support a great cause as well as get to know other Seahawks fans, make friends. Great, great, great situation. So patreon.com/hawkblogger. Do it. You won't regret it. Michael Mathis here with a super chat. I'm really impressed by our process this offseason. I'm nervous about Leonard Williams getting overpaid because of sunk costs similar to Adams. Yeah, I think that's kind of fair. And that's one of the things I'm concerned about as well. The difference with Leonard Williams is he does not have the injury history or issue that Jamal Adams has had. And Leonard Williams has been a very consistent performer wherever he's been. And Leonard Williams can play any spot on the defensive line. He can play five tech on the outside. He can play nose. He can play three tech. And I think three tech is my favorite place for him. But he's just a guy that can play all over the line. He's been relatively durable. There's no guarantees, but I think Jamal very much more felt like a reach to spend that kind of money and to justify the trade cost was part of what was going on there. Not to mention positional value. Jamal's a safety who then played some linebacker and sent some defensive end. Leonard Williams is a defensive tackle and one of the 15 best defensive tackles in the NFL. That might not sound like much, but considering there are two on every line as starters, you know, you're talking about one of the, you know, top half of the starters in the league. And the Seahawks have not had that in general. So I'm not as worried about that with Leonard Williams. If you could tell me we're getting Byron Murphy, cool, let's do it. But I think that they really are going to need to trade back from 16, most likely, unless someone amazing like Jared Verse falls to them. So I think that, you know, Leonard Williams just feels like almost a must sign at this point, because I think if you go into the draft without him, you're going to feel really pressured to reach for defensive tackle. And I just, I don't think defensive tackle is the best position in this draft. There's some guys that I like. I'm just pulling up a couple here. We haven't talked since the combine. I've already talked a lot about Byron Murphy. I'm not as big of a Johnny Newton fan from just his weight perspective. I'd like a little bit of a bigger dude, but that's okay. He's I wouldn't hate him. Braden Fisk just blew up at the draft. He's lighter. I think he weighed in at 285. So he's a very specific kind of player, but certainly is a freak of an athlete. Chris Jenkins, we've talked about, I think is great kid. really interesting player, but I don't know that he's, you know, just a huge difference maker. Rook Aroaro, one of the best names in the draft. Also, you know, athletically just blew up at the combine. I think Brandon Dorlis from Oregon is an interesting guy later. That's not the guy I want as a core part of your draft. But I think he's interesting. Tavondre Sweat, we've talked about. I thought Tavondre Sweat had a great combine. That guy can move mountains, and I think he would be great. I'm just really curious where he's going to go and what it would take to get him. So there's a few guys in the draft that are kind of interesting, but I think of all those guys, the only guys that I think probably are year one impact players are potentially the teammates. Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat. I have a feeling that both of them are going to be impact guys. I think the other guys are probably a little bit more developmental. So a couple other thoughts before I'm going to have to run in a little bit and get the kiddo ready for bed and do bath and all that kind of stuff. But this interesting piece around everyone just kind of crapping on John Schneider and this Jamal Adams trade and how awful he is in trades. And I was thinking about that today, and I think it's kind of a false story. It's a false narrative. And I tweeted about this, and you can go find the tweet if you're interested. But I think what's happened with John Schneider is that a lot of his splash moves, big name moves, haven't worked out so well. And almost none of them have been a good return on investment. You know, even Dwayne Brown was, I think, probably a good move overall. He had a really quality left tackle for a few years of Russell Wilson. Jadeveon Clowney, he had a good year with the Seahawks, but he was only here for 1 year, and I don't think you can justify that. Sheldon Richardson was okay, definitely not worth what they gave up for him. Jimmy Graham had a lot of numbers, but I think if you've been following me for a while, you know from the moment that trade was announced, I was against that trade. I think that was the beginning of the end for the Seahawks. That was when they prioritized skill players over the trenches. And they've never, it's like the curse of Max Unger. They've never been able to really solidify the center of that line since Unger moved on. Even though Jimmy Graham put up some big numbers with the Seahawks, it was an awful trade for the team. I'll actually say this. I'll get to my other point in a second, but I'm going to take a quick detour. Everyone's talking about the Jamal Adams trade as the worst trade in Seahawks history or something along those lines. As far as what was surrendered for what was gained, yeah, that I think that's probably a fair assessment. But if you're talking about impact to the team, impact to the franchise, impact to the ability to contend and compete, I would argue that the Max Unger for Jimmy Graham trade was actually a worse move for the Seahawks than the Jamal Adams trade. I think that the moving on from Max Unger ended the window for the Seahawks. I absolutely believe that to be true. I think that that line became just a joke from that point on. And people forget that it wasn't at some point. It wasn't a joke. When the Seahawks went to the Super Bowl, it was not a joke. And I think that move was far more harmful to the Seahawks than the Jamal Adams deal. Now, that can be debated, but that's my perspective. I don't think the Percy Harvin trade is as harmful as some people want to throw that in there as also one of the worst deals. They certainly didn't get much return on that deal. Percy Harvin helped them win a Super Bowl, even with a little bit. Even though he only played a little bit. he was an impact player in that Super Bowl, and it's not just the kick return, opening drive, end around. Like, he was part of that game. He absolutely was part of that game, and that's the only Super Bowl we've won. So, yes, I see the comment here that it also ended up costing us Golden Tate when we had Golden on the show. We talked about that with him. So, yeah, 100%. There are other costs from that. It's a wide receiver. So, for me, that just I don't think that ends, like, makes or breaks things. The Seahawks ended up being pretty okay at the receiver position for years to come. So, I don't think that trade was as harmful. But the Jamal Adams trade was, getting back to the point, these big trades, Jimmy Graham, Jamal Adams, Jadeveon Clowney, Sheldon Richardson, Dwayne Brown. People forget John Schneider gave up a second and third for Charlie Whitehurst. Like, that's pretty big. A lot of those moves did not pan out. But what people forget is that a lot of the smaller moves did. So while everyone's focused on the Jamal Adams release today, Quandre Diggs was acquired for a fifth-round pick and gave you multiple Pro Bowl seasons at safety. The Seahawks traded Darrell Tapp, and I think they traded Darrell Tapp to Philadelphia for Chris Clemens and a fourth-round pick. They traded, who was it? Like, Rob Sims. I'm going to have to pull it up because I'm curious. They traded, Rob Sims and a seventh for the fifth round pick that became Cam Chancellor. They traded a fifth round pick for Leon Washington. They traded Lawrence Jackson for the pick that became Byron Maxwell. They traded Kelly Jennings for Clinton McDonald from the Bengals. They traded a seventh-round pick for Justin Coleman. They traded B.J. Finney, if you can remember that offensive lineman, and a seventh-round pick for Carlos Dunlap. They traded that fifth for Quandre. So, and don't forget, fourth and a fifth-round pick for Marshawn Lynch. You know, so I just think that narrative about John Schneider that his trades are always bad, I think is lazy and simplistic. I think it's more that his big moves are the ones that, you know, when you give up a lot, it's just hard to get that back. And honestly, that's the case in free agency too. How many of the big free agency contracts do any teams ever feel like, yep, we got what we paid for? It just doesn't happen that often. So what does that tell you? You better be good in the draft. You better hit in the draft. it's simple, but it's just the truth. You got to be amazing in the draft. And then you've also got to be smart about who you sign to second contracts, whether it's your guys or other guys. Second contracts are killers. If you're signing mediocre guys or just above average guys, that's why for me, Damian Lewis is an absolute no sign. You cannot sign Damian Lewis for what he's going to cost, middle of an expensive guard market. Go get someone either good and pay them to be good, or, you know, you're going to have to really go after it in the draft. So anyway, I just think that that's a big thing. The other thing I'll say is, back-to-back days, you've got Russell Wilson getting released, and then you've got Jamal Adams getting released. You know, yin and yang, two polar opposites on the trade spectrum. What's interesting is, think about where the Seahawks would be if they hadn't made the Russell Wilson trade. Think about where the Seahawks would be right now if they had not made the Russell Wilson trade. It's easy in retrospect. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, but they did, and it was obvious. It wasn't obvious. There was the majority of Seahawks fans did not want Russell to go, did not expect him to go, and they moved him. If they hadn't moved him, you would not have Charles Cross. You might not even have Abe Lucas, depending on how draft fell to you and what positions you need to prioritize. You would not have Devin Witherspoon. There are other players, other picks I'm forgetting about. But point being, even just those two guys, Derek Hall, not that worried about having Derek Hall or not, but you've got Derek Hall. So I think the point there is the Seahawks could be in an absolute disastrous position. Thankfully, they're not. They are not. They are in a position where they can afford to make the moves they made today. Yes, Boye Mafe, saying thank you. That's another name they would not have had. The Seahawks can afford to make the moves they made today and still expect to be a good team next year. Doesn't mean they're contenders for the Super Bowl, but they can expect to be a competitive team. And now you give Mike McDonald the opportunity to reshape that defense in his image. And while I don't think this is an issue on the Quandre side, I do think on the Jamal side, he also might have a locker room that he wants in a specific, you know, to operate a specific way. Jamal Adams is kind of his own guy. He does things his own way. Quandre Diggs, he admitted when Bobby Wagner wasn't on the team, he struggled a little bit in the leadership role. He didn't love being the lone leader. I think that now you've got a chance for a new set of leaders to emerge. I think you got a chance for Mike McDonald to be the loudest voice in that locker room. And I think that's important for a head coach's first year. So it's a good reset in general. I think that the Seahawks are better now than they were a few hours ago. I don't feel like Disley was a guy that is a bad player and you need to move on from, but I do think from a cap perspective, they're just in a better position to reshape the team the way they need to. So those are really my primary thoughts about what's been going on today with the Seahawks. We will be back tomorrow night for our official show, and we will talk about the combine. We will talk about how this affects our plans and priorities for the team. There might be other moves. We'll react to those as well. And folks, we are days away from the start of free agency. Monday is the day free agency starts. So, man, please know, if you haven't already subscribed, you want to subscribe, you want to click the bell to get notified when we go live, because I am definitely going to try to go live that day, cover some of the moves, whether they're Seahawks or others, that day. So you're going to want to be subscribed to the channel. Go to patreon.com/hawkblogger, sign up, get access to the Slack channel where the conversation continues around the clock. And I'd also ask folks, if you're at all interested, my other main job right now, I was a tech exec for 26 years, or not all that time, but I worked in tech for all that time. I've done product management and done all sorts of things. But I started a new podcast, and it's a podcast where I interview people, kind of ordinary folks that have gone through kind of interesting careers and made cool choices and had some guts to do things that not everybody has done. And I've got some great, great episodes already up. And I'm going to be releasing some more. In fact, one of the reasons I won't be live immediately on Monday is I'm going down to Olympia to interview somebody who's got a great story. I'll be doing the show in the Capitol. And so that'll be fun. But the show is called Work Dad. WORKDAD. You can find it on YouTube at work-dad. You can find us on TikTok at workdad.io. And so, and then if you're on Twitter, workdadpod. So I'd love if we could get some subscriptions on the Workdad podcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Love any feedback from anybody. And if you know somebody who's had a cool and interesting career, made some courageous choices, drop me an email, Brian, BRIAN, at workdad.io. And who knows, maybe we'll do a show. So please hit me up there, take a look. It's something I'm kind of putting a lot of effort into and would love to have some more folks to talk to about it. So, all right, folks, I am going to let you go now. I appreciate y'all tuning in. There is almost certain to be more shows coming up the next few weeks. Your Seahawks, your Seattle Seahawks are being remade right now, and I think they're going to be better for it. Until next time, take care, go Hawks, and see you soon.
Hey folks, this is Brian Nemhauser. Thanks for listening to the show. Hope you enjoyed it. Want you to know that Real Hawk Talk is available on all major podcast platforms. Go ahead and subscribe. Have all podcasts delivered directly to your phone after each and every show. And then go ahead and leave us a 5-star review. Helps us out, gets more people to the show. Then, if you haven't already done it, go to patreon.com/hawkblogger and subscribe for just $5 a month. Gets you immediate access to our Slack channel. Join hundreds of folks in that community to talk Seahawks about wins, losses, and all things in between. Not to mention, become eligible to win giveaways for Seahawks tickets and get to ask questions of the Real Hawk Talk crew every week on the show. Finally, if you haven't gone to hawkblogger.com recently, head on over. Tail the Tape Morning After articles are there every week. Hoping to see you there. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for supporting the show. Go Hawks.